I call this meeting of the House Finance Subcommittee, House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 12:06 on Saturday, February 22nd, 2020. Today I have with me, and this is Chair Jennifer Johnson. Today I have Representative LeBon, Representative Carpenter, and Representative Sullivan Leonard. And online, listening from the Fairbanks LIO, is Senator Kawasaki. Today the committee has convened without a quorum for the purpose of hearing public testimony, and no official business will transpire. Just to reiterate, this afternoon we'll be hearing public testimony on House Bill 205, the FY21 operating budget, House Bill 206, the FY21 mental health budget. We'll be taking testimony from all over the state. Please sign in at your LIO or call in 30 minutes prior to the end of the allotted time period, or testimony may close early. We would ask folks limit their testimony to 2 minutes to allow enough time for others to testify. We also ask all off-net callers to please hang up after your testimony to keep as many lines open as possible for other callers. Testifiers can continue to access the meeting on your computer through akledge.gov. That's akledge.gov. Click on the Live Now button. The hearing may also be televised on Gavel to Gavel as well. There are three numbers for off-net callers. For those callers outside of Anchorage and Juneau area, please use 844-586-9085. That is 844-586-9085. If you're in the Anchorage area, you can call in at 563-9085. That's 563-9085. And if you are in Southeast, you can call in with 586-9085. That's in the Southeast. It's 586-9085. If you'd like to provide written testimony, you may submit that to the House Finance Committee at housefinance@akledge.gov. Again, that's housefinance@akledge.gov. Emails will be accepted through 1 p.m. Wednesday, February 26, 2020. With that, we will continue with public testimony. testifiers may be in the room, LIO, or off-net. Our first testifier today will be Amanda Mativer in Anchorage, and after her will be Abigail Redon. So, Amanda, are you there?
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
I can. Please introduce yourself.
My name's Amanda. Oh, you ready?
Yes.
For the record, my name's Amanda Mativier, and I'm testifying on behalf of Facing Foster Care in Alaska. We're a statewide nonprofit of young people in and from the foster care system. And I myself am a former foster youth and have been a foster parent now for over a decade. I'm testifying in support today of continuing positions for the Office of Children's Services that were originally allocated in House Bill 151 about 2 years ago. Alaska has the second highest rate per capita of children in foster care in the country. And I'm also requesting support for a proposal by the Department of Health and Social Services to add an additional deputy commissioner position to specifically oversee the Office of Children's Services and the Division of Juvenile Justice. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to say that also Representative Kelly Merrick is in the Anchorage LIO. Next, we have Abigail Redon. Abigail, are you there?
I am here, yes.
And can
my name is Abigail Redman. I am 50 years old. I'm a facing foster care in Alaska. I've been in foster care for 15 years, and I've had 23 placements, including treatment centers and group homes. I've had so many caseworkers to the point where I stopped counting. I'm currently a sophomore at West High School, and I am here today to testify to support continued funding for OCS staff so we can reduce the amount of cases an OCS worker has so youth like me can have a better experience when going through the system.
Thank you, Abigail. Next, we have Mateo Jamie, and after that, Isaiah King. Mateo?
I am here. Could you hear me?
Yes, we can.
My name is Mateo Jaime. I am representing FSDA. I am 18 years old and am a senior at Diamond. I have been in the foster care system for 3 years and have had 6 placements. I'm testifying today to sustain funds in the budget for OCS caseworkers. This is imperative because a profusion of youth are losing their connections with relatives such as fathers, mothers, aunts, uncles, cousins. And this is a result of the high turnover rate for social workers. I've had at least 5 social workers, and as a result, a letter from my biological father, who I have not heard in over 3 years, was lost. I thank you all for your time.
Thank you very much, Mateo. Next, Isaiah, I do not see any questions. Next is Isaiah King.
Hello, my name is Isaiah King. I'm 21 years old. I'm going to APU. I'm studying counseling and psychology. I was in foster care for about 18 years in my life before getting adopted out. I had about 15 placements in there. And I'm here advocating and speaking on behalf of the bill, the budget for OCS workers as well, because I feel like that's more important because of the connections we don't have. The less the cases they have, they're just piling up, so they're not able to meet with their cases. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Isaiah. I don't see any questions. I'd like to say that Representative Josephson has joined Representative Merrick at the Anchorage LIO. Next, we have Natasha Gamachi at the Anchorage LIO.
Hello.
Yes. Could you introduce yourself?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I am here today to speak on behalf of the mental health budget. I'm sorry that I'm not better prepared in knowing what the mental health budget looks like, but I would ask that our legislators be thoughtful and deliberate in what our budget looks like. Right now, because of the way our Medicaid structure is in the state of Alaska, we have a severe shortage of mental health workers that are able to provide services to lower income residents. One of those residents happens to be my 6-year-old son, Logan. Logan has been systematically bullied at his school all year, and because I've not been able to get him adequate mental health services, my 6-year-old tried to kill himself on Wednesday and is now in North Star Hospital. And when I asked the workers what were we looking at, they said because of various things within the state, there are no treatment centers for children under the age of 12 years old. So if they recommend residential treatment for my son, he will have to be sent out of state. This is a travesty, and we should not be separating small children from their families in order to access comprehensive and adequate mental health treatment so that our young people are not trying to kill themselves. And we know that this is a problem throughout the state of Alaska. The number one cause of death between 15 and 24-year-olds is suicide. We are failing our young people, and it is on you and on all of us to be doing a better job advocating and providing services for our young people so that they stay alive and that they grow to be the next generation of leaders. Thank you.
Thank you, and our thoughts are with you. I wish your son well, and I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Next, we'll be going to the Kodiak LIO. where Pat Holmes is there.
Yes, thank you, Representative Johnson. I appreciate that and all the hard work you folks have to do. I'm kind of a newcomer to Alaska. I didn't get here till Pop got out of the Navy in 59. And I can get right to the point and not do my normal long stories. I think that there should be no increase in the PFD. We need to go back to the priorities of statehood and the first 25 years before oil, and that was education, public safety, transportation, and that includes marine highway systems, fisheries, and social services. We need to increase revenues, and amongst those to be oil royalties. We need to go back, it's not a new tax, to the wage tax that we dropped, and also we need to go back to the school head tax. And they need to allow resource royalties like the raw fish tax to go back to the communities in which they're generated and where the communities support those things. And perhaps if we are to become a true conservative state, maybe we should raise some revenues by changing the mainland highways to toll roads like they do in Florida. I'd like to end by saying that I have been a Republican most of my life. And I think that we've just swung a little bit too far to the right and have allowed the legislature to be influenced by large corporations. The whole discussion on oil revenues was to increase jobs, and what, a month and a half after that, BP laid off 1,500. So I'm not grumpy at you folks, but as very difficult time for everyone, and I hope that you can find some reasonable compromise and consensus like we did in the days of my youth. So thank you very much for doing what you do. Have a good day.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. I missed what you first said about the dividend.
I do not think it should be increased. That supplement that the governor wishes to have, I think, is not necessary. It would help a few folks. But I think I would rather see that money go to education, because that's where we avoid a lot of social problems that we have in our state. And I think the amount that would normally be coming out does not need to be increased by 1,300 or whatever it is. I'd much rather see that go to education.
Thank you very much. Next we have, and from the Wrangell LIO, and I'd like to say that Representative Ortiz has just joined us. At the Wrangell LIO is Brian Merritt, and after him will be Brenda Yeager.
This is Brian Merritt representing SELF. Finance Committee members, thanks for keeping this legislative office open so my voice can be heard on Alaska issues. I hope you will consider not closing the Wrangell Fish and Game office. Many Wrangell people use the facility for various activities that can't be done online, such as sealing hides, checking in moose antlers and lower jaws, tooth extraction from bear skulls, and other personal human-to-human interactions. I personally stop by the local office around 10 times per year to get clarification on both sport and commercial fishing regulations. I would like to direct your attention to the ADF&G Game Guiding Principles and Core Services, which I found on the ADF&G website. Quote 1. Provide information on Alaska Fish and Wildlife resources to all customers. Kim Fisher, Wrangell's 20-year-plus secretary, is outstanding with immediate answers on fish and wildlife questions and assistance on filling out reports on forms required to access Alaska's fish and game both on a sport and commercial basis. Quote 2, increase public knowledge and confidence that wild populations of fish and wildlife are responsibly managed. Stephen Todd from our local Wrangell office does an excellent job of monitoring and explaining to me and others how the salmon stocks are doing on the Stikine River. Quote 3, foster professionalism in department staff. Both Kim and Steve are excellent at this, and if you need an answer to anything I've ever asked them in 20 years, they will find it. Another reason for keeping this office open in Wrangell is to show the Canadians that we are monitoring and doing our part and keeping track of the Stikine River. As a 52-year resident of Wrangell, I beg you all to support the Alaska Marine Highway System. This is basically our road system down here in Southeast, much like actual roads for other areas of Alaska. The ferries not only transport our local sports teams, seafood, freight, and vehicles, they also allow a lot of tourists to visit many places in Alaska, which brings in new money to lots of places in Alaska, not just Southeast. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, could we hear from, are there any questions? Next, can we hear from Brenda Yeager, and on doc is Jim Anderson.
Hi, my name is Brenda Yeager, and I'm representing myself. Thank you for listening to me. I'd like to talk to you about how profoundly I'm affected by the changes in the Marine Highway. I own three businesses, and they're all profoundly affected. I'm a commercial fisherman, and most of my fish product typically would leave on Alaska Marine Highway vessels. I'm an artist, and I travel to art shows all over the region. My artwork's too large to fly usually, and that's how I get around to earn a living, and that is no longer working. I also own and operate a tour company, and I have lots of clients who like to come here on the Marine Highway system, and that's becoming increasingly difficult. The Alaska Marine Highway needs to have a consistent, reliable, and frequent service, and importantly, it needs to be forward-funded so the schedules can come out in at least a year in advance, because that's when people are planning their travel. We've had a huge decline in visitors here in my community as a result of decreased Marine Highway reliability and visitation. I'd also like to talk to you and any state leadership that will listen to me to express my concerns regarding the possible recommendation to close the Wrangell Fish and Game Office and positions related to its operation. I'm a commercial fisherman and own and operate a charter company, and I avidly participate in recreational hunting and fishing. Additionally, my family participates intensely in subsistence fishing and hunting activities. We utilize our Fish and Game Office frequently. We have to keep up on regulations that are changing constantly, especially on our king salmon. We often go in to clarify new or changing regulations. We have weekly reports and constant logbook needs that for our guided sport fishing operations. We work closely with the creel samplers here to manage stocks. We get our tags for moose, bear, and goats at the office and then present those animals back there for verification of legal harvest. We report problems there or get advice. We frequently touch base with the Stikine River King Salmon Research that our work at that office. And we see our personnel in the field doing assessments in commercial and sport and shellfish and game biomass in our region. Wrangell is importantly located at the mouth of one of the largest wild salmon producing rivers on the coast. Wrangell has a high percentage of population that participates heavily in subsistence activities, and many of these folks are older and don't use email or computers. We statistically have a higher elderly population. They're not adaptive to this technology, and they walk in the office here to get what they need to stay compliant. We also have a large crab and shrimp fleet that fish commercially here, and this requires a fisheries that's kind of an in-season management tactics on both the department's assessment and almost daily as well for tag replacements and notifications by the fishermen to stay compliant and fishing. These fisheries and related visitor-related jobs are our largest private sector economic driver.
Thank you. I don't see any questions. Next, can we hear from Jim Anderson in Wrangell?
Good afternoon. I've only been here a couple years, been in Alaska 27 years, came from a different area. There's been a lot of clarification required for not only sport fishing, but for subsistence and personal use. And both the people here have been extremely helpful. There's no substitute, as Brian Merritt put it very well, there's no substitute for face-to-face collaboration with these people, and they have been both very helpful. And so I really want to support keeping the Wrangell office open, if at all possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, could we please hear from Deborah Lancaster?
Hello, Finance Committee members. My name is Deborah Lancaster. I'm the superintendent for Wrangell Public School District here in Wrangell, and I want to advocate for a full-time OCS office, a full-time worker here in Wrangell. Whereas in Wrangell we have great individual resources for supporting our students and our families, we need a full-time presence of OCS. Typically, OCS gets resistance when they're in communities because they have this picture of separating children and families. Well, I come from a district where I've seen a different side of OCS. I have seen where OCS provides community members, families, support with de-escalation, with reunification of families, with strategies that people don't have from any other resource. So with a 52% poverty level in Wrangell, our children are struggling sometimes with issues that are in their home life. And so our Wrangell Public School District is experiencing funding cuts, and with that, we're not able to provide the school counseling at the levels we need. OCS is needed more now than ever. And so I want to speak on behalf of the Wrangell Public School District and the children and families here. I strongly urge funding a full-time local OCS office. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I do not see any questions. Next up is Larry Klein, and then we'll be going to the off-net with Kevin McClure.
Hi, my name is Larry Klein. I moved here a few years ago, retired, and I just do mostly sport fishing, hunting, stuff on my own. This office has been an absolute necessity to me. I am not versed in the computers whatsoever. I barely can look things up. The time it takes me to look anything up on that computer, I can have it answered here completely and honestly and thoroughly, so I do not get into any hassles with any of the fishing game troopers, anything like that. It's very clear to me. Trying to understand and go through this computer has been a hassle. Talking to these people, Kim, it's been fantastic. They helped me beyond anything I've ever experienced before. It's a privilege to come up here. I cannot believe how good they are, how fast they are. It's been a privilege. It's been off and on. I don't use them constantly. I've tried to use the internet and wind up having to come down here anyways. I just mess it up. They are a benefit. They're just too nice. The fishing, like they say, the fishing laws change quick. You don't know what's going on half the time, but I can get an answer down here and be out in no time at all. They're just an absolute necessity in my book, at least to me. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any questions. Next, we'll have Kevin McClure from Anchorage on the off-net. Could you please give us your name and put yourself on record?
Good afternoon. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak to you. My name is Kevin McClure. I'm the current Alaska Wing Commander for the Civil Air Patrol. I came to Alaska over 40 years ago and have never left. Alaska is my home. The Civil Air Patrol in Alaska was chartered in 1948 with three major missions: emergency service, aerospace education, and cadet programs. In 1 2-year time frame, CAP pilots have flown over 400 hours, 100 missions, resulting in 48 finds and 7 saves. If the troopers had flown state aircraft on the same mission, the cost would have been over $240,000. If helicopters were used, the cost would have been over $325,000. When the cost of an aircraft and helicopter accidents are factored in, the cost to the state would be in the millions. The only pay our volunteer force receives is seeing the results of our efforts. We watch as families are reunited or closure is brought to a difficult situation. We use our radios to talk to Fairbanks and Valdez within 1 hour of the 2018 earthquake, and have provided the ability of aerial photos to the states within hours. We take pride in watching our cadets become productive adults, being accepted into colleges, military academies, and becoming pilot replacement of our aging bush pilots. I'm here to ask you to help continue support our mission and keep our doors open. Thank you for including us in your proposed budget and listening to me today.
Thank you. I don't see any questions. I'm going to have to take a quick at ease. I've got a technical difficulty. Next, we have Carlos Alvarez from the Anchorage School District on the off-net, and after that will be Paul Barron. Carlos, could you please put your name on the record and who you're affiliated with?
Good afternoon. My name is Carlos Alvarez. I am the band director at Central Middle School here in Anchorage. Thank you all very much for your time and the efforts you've done to support public education in the past. I am here to support forward funding for K-12 public education. Forward funding helps to reduce the turnover rate among educators and provide much needed consistency in their lives. I've seen teachers who have been pink slipped and then rehired, and they have delayed buying homes, delayed growing their families because they don't have the certainty that they need to be able to make plans for the future. And then increased certainty for our educators translates to increased certainty for our students. At Central, we have a very low income student population, as well as a high proportion of children of our men and women in uniform. And those kids have enough chaos in their lives with families in and out of prison, families who have experienced violence, parents being deployed in the military, and for some of them, the only source of consistency in their lives is public education. And if there's this constant revolving door of teachers, that is also taken away from them. So forward funding is a low-cost way to help maintain that consistency for our students. Thank you very much for your time and your efforts on behalf of public education. Good afternoon.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. Next, Paul Barron, and after that from Juneau, and after that, Ann Hansen from Haynes.
Hello, my name is Paul Barron. I'm a retired Presbyterian minister. For some years, it was my responsibility to work with the churches from Yakutat to Metlakatla and depended heavily on the ferry system. I'd encourage the legislature to look at simply the name, Alaska Marine Highway. It's not a special interest group. It's an Alaska highway, and its funding is imperative to not have ferry service to the many villages is to strangle them. But to increase funding means to have increased revenue. And I would urge the legislature to adopt a progressive income tax. A sales tax is regressive. It penalizes the poor. Is that what we want to do? I don't think so. But an income tax that is progressive allows all of us to have a participation and responsibility to our government. It's nothing free. Secondly, by having a progressive income tax, would also impose a tax on the many workers that live out of state but work in oil, mining, and fisheries in-state, who presently pay no tax to Alaska and pay income tax to the state of their residence or no state tax at all. If it is necessary to decrease the PFD to maintain our services, I think that is imperative. So this summarizes, I want to say, we need to increase funding and service of the ferry system and to raise income, probably through a progressive income tax. Thank you for this opportunity to testify to you. I'm grateful.
Thank you. Representative Laban has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Barron, for calling in today. You mentioned a progressive income tax. Have you given thought as to how that would function? Would there be a floor and a ceiling on the income and a rate on different levels of income, or have you done a dive into the details of a progressive income tax? And thank you for calling in.
As I've thought about it, I believe few states have it more easily completed than Alaska. Our people mostly get a PFD dividend, but I would have this tied to our federal income tax returns, that a certain percentage of our federal tax we would pay to Alaska, our state.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Ann Hansen from Haines.
Thank you. My name is Ann Hansen. I am from Haines, and I am calling in to support the budget amendment for public radio. Haines is a very small community. We're certainly not known for agreeing on much, actually, but one thing I think we can agree on is that we value the public radio and the local news that has become a priority in our town. Especially currently with the transportation woes that we're experiencing with no ferries and few flights that are weather dependent, it's important for us to know what's happening with the Haines Highway. Is it open? Is it safe for travelers that may be having to get to Whitehorse to get out further? Are kids going to be able to go to state for their wrestling championships at Fairbanks? We don't normally have snow days here, but we did recently, and it was great to have the radio station giving us news from the public safety folks who said, please to stay off, everybody, stay off the roads today. We have only a weekly newspaper here, and KHNS covers the local issues of importance to our whole community. Programming certainly includes a lot more, local, state, and national and world news and discussion, music for just about everybody, and even the Haines High School basketball away games. It is just a hugely important thing to our community, to kids, to families, to seniors, that we have many, and I appreciate your support in the past. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, and I do not see any questions. Next, we'll be going to the Sitka LIO, where Harriet Beeley is, and after that, Stacy Goad. And could you introduce yourself?
Okay, I am a 86-year-old Alaska Native elder, and I live in Sitka, Alaska. I am also the vice president and secretary for the Alaska Native Brotherhood Camp 1. We also have Alaska Native Sisterhood Camp 4. This week and the last three or four days, along with the Grand Camp officers, we recently sponsored in Sitka an Operation Airlift to the villages of Angoon, Huna, and Cake. Relatives and families were sharing with us how many families have bare cupboards. Yesterday and today, we shipped close to 2,000 pounds of groceries and necessities from Sitka local citizens and businesses, especially the Alaska Commercial Company, used to be called Lakeside, gave us lots of food, and the Alaska Seaplane offered to ship it over. So people came together and donated money, all of us, because we realized it is very, very expensive to ship by air. Perhaps other communities could start a food drive for small villages. Without the Alaska Marine Highway operating throughout Southeast Alaska cities and villages, Kodiak, Seward, and Cordova, we are having a far-reaching, crippling effect on all of us, especially villages like Angoon, Huna, and Cake. Their shelves are bare. There is no affordable means of transportation to these villages, and many of them have only seasonal work, such as fishing industry. It is much too expensive to fly, and they can't afford to stock up on their groceries and essentials in the fall time. People coming from search hospital appointments, students going to basketball, baseball, debate teams, tournaments, especially all of Southeast Alaska Natives, and others who go to the Sea Alaska celebration every 2 years to celebrate our Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian cultures. And so, to sum it up, our people's quality of life has been suffering greatly and has been hitting our pocketbooks pretty hard. We cannot afford the what it costs just to go to Juneau. The Alaska Celebration attracts approximately 40 to 50 dance groups from Alaska, Canada, and the lower 48. The dance groups have to save 2 years to try to afford to go. Please do all you can in your power, legislators, to get our ferry system back. And I thank Bert Stedman and Jonathan Crest Tompkins, who are doing a lot of fighting for us there in Juneau. And I am confident you will do what you can, too, to get our ferry system back. Thank you very much for listening to me today, and God bless all of you. And please work hard on us getting our ferry system back. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I don't see any questions. Next, we have Stacy Goad from Sitka.
Good afternoon. My name is Stacy Goad. I live here in Sitka. I've been a resident of Southeast Alaska since 1983. I'd like to dovetail on my respected Elder Harriet's testimony. I'm here also to represent myself and speak on behalf of the lack of ferry service here in Southeast Alaska, but we also have residents in Kodiak and the Aleutian Chains and all of Prince William Sound who are being radically impacted by the loss of ferry service. Thank you today for being there. I know you've heard this over and over again. My voice is just one of many in a loud chorus that are desperately asking our state legislator and our governor to restore the funds to the ferry system so all of us can live affordable, healthy, and happy lives. I just want to give a personal example, a recent example of how the ferry has impacted a simple thing like a car repair. Here in Sitka, we have one garage that can do some repairs but not significant repairs. We have to put a car on the ferry, shuttle it to Juneau, where we can we pay $500 to get the truck there with the driver. We have to wait and then go back maybe another week later to retrieve that car and bring it back home here so that we have a car. So that's an example of just how the loss of a ferry service prevents us from, transporting. But then on a more personal level, we can't even get our car repaired so that we can transport ourselves around here in our community for our personal and work lives. Also, I do want to say I was a part of the group here in Sitka that just did the airlift to Cake, Angoon, and Huna. This was a town hall event that was recorded on KCAW, our Raven Radio here in Sitka. If any of you are interested in viewing that, there were a lot of ideas generated out of there, a lot of concerns that we'd like raised with our legislator and our governor. That was an incredible effort. And in addition to donations of food and seaplane transportation, we have local fishermen who are using their own commercial vessels to load those boxes of food over to those small villages and deliver them. And it's just unreasonable to have to continue to do this. The state of Alaska has stopped the ferry system, and they need to find another way to provide services to our communities. It's expensive to live in remote areas. The governor continuing to veto and the legislature's efforts to fund the services here to all of Alaska's living in remote areas has pitted urban against rural and white against native. He He's just elevated racism in our state. And we've heard comments from representatives of our state government up in the Anchorage Bull area make those horrible comments that we've chosen to live in these places. That is just outrageous. And I would encourage those representatives to travel down here to Angoon, to Cake, Hoona, Sitka, Petersburg, Prince William Island, and see for themselves what it's like down here and how much dignity and respect people have for one another down here, because we're proud and we've always managed to take care of ourselves. We don't need anybody in government in Anchorage Bowl making those kind of unprofessional and racist comments. Governor Dunleavy has divided our state. He needs to fix it. And as part of the legislature, I ask you, please, to listen to the voices of the people who have elected you and restore the funding to the Alaska Marine Highway. For all of us, we are equal citizens. We're as valuable as anyone living on a road system. Thank you for your time. God bless you.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions. Next, we'll go to Pete Hoffner in Cordova, LIO.
Yes, this is Peter Hefner. I'm a Cordova school board member, as well as a commercial fisherman and small businessman. Thank you very much to the House Finance Committee members there. I appreciate the time that you've committed to hearing from communities. We are getting a bit of a snow squall here in Cordova, and it might be keeping folks in. The state seems to be in a bit of a turmoil these days. Budgetary issues affect all of us. With deficit spending these last 6-7 years, and the prior budgeting process has left many residents with uncertainties. Will the ferries come back? What will happen with school funding? Primarily, in my humble opinion, the state needs new revenue and the development of a stable fiscal budget. Education funding. Over the last 10 years, with only an 8.7% increase in the BSA and an increase in the consumer price index of 27%, and our health insurance cost increased 326% in the same time period, the TERS and PERS numbers increasing as well, and with the state funding being level, there is less and less money going to the classrooms. With no inflation proofing of the BSA, increased costs are starving our education system. The retaining and recruiting of teachers, by changing the teacher's retirement system from a defined benefits to a defined contribution system, the state is actually incentivizing teachers to leave the state after 5 years. The Alaska Marine Highway System and the unintended consequences of this sudden cancellation of the system for 9 months in Cordova. This has further burdened our schools and students, to say nothing about Cordova's economy. The difference between our budgeted ferry transportation for school activities to flying our students has made our school district have to come up with $150,000 due to this sudden shutdown. I'm very proud of the Sitkins, who are sending foods to Hoona and Cake. Communities in Alaska are suffering from food insecurities and getting food donations. Please address the budget, as Alaska is in crisis. This deficit spending needs to stop. Students bound for college this year were in crisis this summer when scholarship accounts were swept. Elders are crying to the legislature about being evicted. Schools are losing funding. We need to move Alaska forward rather than shutting Alaska down. We need to stop the out-migration of Alaskans. We need to stop starving Alaska. Our yearly revenue has been at $2 billion since 2015. A flat rate income tax would be a start, as out-of-state workers pay to their home state money from revenue made in Alaska. Oil taxes, these are another issue. We are all Alaskans. Rural Alaskans are Alaskans. This is a vast state, and we are not centered in the Mat-Su Valley. thank you for your time and appreciate listening.
Thank you, and I don't see any questions. Next, we'll go back to the Anchorage LIO for Dana Dardis.
Hi. We have a real problem here in Alaska that's harming our children. It's called injustice, inequality, and inequity in our mental health programs, in our institutions, and in our education systems that support individuals and families. There is a difference affecting those families who experience the many barriers, including prejudices and stigmas from race, gender, and social economic hardship when dealing with mental health issues. I was fortunate enough to have had the financial support, the ability, the education, and the time to advocate and support my son, and to take him out of state to get help for issues of Tourette's, OCD, ADHD, ODD, childhood sleep apnea, and highly gifted. I recognize that there are thousands of families in Alaska who do not have the means to do what I did to assure the success and well-being of their children. Taking care of children's mental health is imperative to making sure that our society at large is mentally well and functioning as these children become adults. It also includes the safety issues that we have in Alaska. I am asking you to be thoughtful in your consideration to the state's mental health budget in terms of what it means in the state to make morally sound decisions that are just, equal, and equitable. Thank you.
Thank you. I do not see any questions. Next, we will go to Rangel and Bruce Smith, and then after that, Bruce Ward.
Yes, this is Bruce Smith in Rangel. I just want to say that to keep the Fish and Game office open here, we use it quite a bit, the community. And thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your brevity. Bruce Ward, and after that, Denise Stewart.
Yes, this is Bruce Ward. I'm born and raised in Wrangell, Alaska. Our ferry system is extremely important to us. The canneries, the local people are suffering from it. This is basically our highway. Without it, we're suffering extremely. Fish and Game Office is very, very important. Our local lady, Kim, helps us, all the fishermen with licenses and tags. Very valuable also in sealing our furs. And lastly, but something we have to always consider, is outside boats come to Alaska to go fishing in this area, and they come to Wrangell because they like Wrangell. She helps them with their licenses, their tags. And on the flip side, these boats stay here, and they actually buy fuel, groceries, deliver product here. We need this officer very, very bad. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I do not see any questions. Next, we'll have Denise Stewart.
This is Denise Stewart, and I just want to say that I think it's highly important that you keep the Fish and Wildlife Office open here in Wrangell, Alaska. Alaska is a great state, and part of the reason is because of the fishermen, the old guard, and they use the office on a regular basis, and some of them are not computer savvy, and it's getting really frustrating for the older fishermen to keep on top of their paperwork without offices like we have here in Wrangell, and a person like Kim helping them through all the responsibilities and legalities and the paperwork that they need to do. So I hope you take this into consideration of the fishermen that have made this state great. Thank you.
Thank you. And I do not see any questions. Next, we'll go to the off-net where Gert Abbott from Ketchikan.
Hello, my name is Garrett Abbott. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, and I'm calling about the importance of appropriately funding our state's Medicaid system. In the past, the legislature and the governor have regularly shortchanged the system, requiring supplemental budgets. As the program is essential to life in rural Alaska, and as more than 25% of our population rely on Medicaid, interruptions to funding, not to speak of permanent cuts, do tremendous violence to our social fabric, and widen the gulf, the economic gulf, between the central urban parts of the state and the peripheral communities that are barely hanging on. That's what I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I do not see any questions. Thank you. Next, we'll be going to the TOC LIO where Lise Sherwood is. Lise, could you please introduce yourself and your affiliation?
Hello, my name's Lise Sherwood, and my town of residence is TOC, Alaska. I'm a senior citizen living on a Social Security check and the wonderful benefits for a person over 65 that the state of Alaska provides. And I'm so happy to be here in this great state. I've worked for over 30 years when I was employed, and all the money I made went back into state of Alaska businesses that paid taxes, and all the money I get now goes back into the state businesses that pay their taxes. So I'm a happy citizen, and I managed to make ends meet with a budget and with networking and with helping others, and others help me. And I have just noticed that there are a lot of programs in the state of Alaska that could be cut without any detrimental loss of benefits to the citizens. And I'm glad that we're blessed in a state that has natural gas and oil and coal. The United States is the largest exporter of energy now on the planet, so we need to direct our resources into developing that. And I just really appreciate you guys in the legislature and you ladies and all that you do for us citizens. And I'm more grateful than I am with actual nuts and bolts ways for you to reduce budgets, but 10-20% reduced everywhere, we could make do with that loss of services from whatever program. I'd even be willing to let my senior benefits be reduced by 10-20%. But that's been my testimony. I thank you for the governor's efforts on behalf of the permanent fund dividend. And this is Lise Sherwood in TOC, Alaska, greatly appreciative of my representatives and their efforts and their labors. Thank you. God bless and bye-bye.
Thank you, and I do not see a question. Thank you very much. We will take a 30-minute at ease. There's currently no one else signed up, so we'll take an at ease for 30 minutes. Thank you. call this meeting back to order. We will now go to the Anchorage LIO, where Michelle Geralt is there, and after her would be Jesse Phillips. Could you please come to the microphone and announce your name and your affiliation?
Yes, thank you. I am here. This is Michelle Giroux, and I'm representing the Key Coalition of Alaska. We visited all of you a couple weeks ago down in Juneau, and I'm just here to kind of reiterate and elevate the two platform issues that we brought to two legislators. I've been in the provider business for folks with disabilities for over 36 years in Alaska. And for those of you who have been long-term Alaskans, you know that we closed our state institution in the 90s and moved toward home and community-based services more intentionally. But over the past 5 years, there have been a reduction in those services, and access has been limited for people that experience disabilities. In 2017, there were 2,085 people in Alaska on waivered services, and in 2019, that has dropped to 2,048. And the wait list is now standing at 730 people. So we're very concerned about the erosion of access to community services, while at the same time, a number of our Alaskans are being sent out of state for services. So we think that there can be some additional things that can be done in the budget to help stabilize home and community-based services, which are far less costly than sending people out of state or sending them through a path of hospitalization or API. The other thing that is of concern to us is that there are a number of people still living with aging parents that have disabilities, and as those parents are hitting their 80s and those individuals are not on the wait list, that our capacity to serve Alaskans in need is eroding. So our two platform issues that we brought to you all was to create a path of stable service structure for home and community-based providers and to find a path to reduce the wait list. Currently, the wait list is being drawn at a crisis level. So people are being drawn or prioritized at absolute crisis, and those that have natural support, family, friends, or just need a little bit of service to help them access a job or access opportunity in community are not being pulled, and those people are languishing. So all the investment we put into special education, people graduate into a black hole and are not able to access service. So urge you to look at this. I know that there are members that are acting with SDS to bring that to the forefront and to get more specific issues. And if any questions exist, the Key Coalition is happy to get more data and answers to any of you. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Ortiz has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Michelle, could you, when you use the term home and community-based services, does that include the term dayhab services for folks with disabilities and seniors?
Correct. Dayhabilitation is one of the Medicaid service categories within the home and community-based waiver. And that particular category has been reduced over the last 5 years for individuals.
Follow up? And when you say it's been reduced, it's my understanding that at one point folks receiving dayhab services could receive up to 25 hours of services, and it's been reduced to 12. Is that correct?
The cap is 12. You can advocate with a care coordinator writing a very defensive plan to get a little bit more, but the majority only get 12.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Next, could we have Jesse Phillips come up to the table and introduce yourself and your affiliation?
My name is Jesse Phillips, and I am representing myself today. We are the daughters, granddaughters, grandmothers, aunts, nieces, and mothers. We are the sons, grandsons, grandfathers, uncles, nephews, and fathers. We are the generations who oppose domestic violence from entering into our homes, both individually and collectively as a community. We are all responsible to prevent domestic violence. When an individual has been raised in domestic violence, believe them. Somebody who has been raised in domestic violence is 7 times more likely to commit domestic violence themselves. People don't change overnight. They change how they believe in something over long periods of time with additional counseling that challenges their core beliefs. There is nothing normal about domestic violence because it does not discriminate. It perpetuates through society who thinks it is normal. Listen to communities when they tell you this is the way, only way to live. Look at me, I turned out just fine. But in fact, we are not fine as we continue to spend $8.6 to $12.8 billion annually through the United States Department of Justice, according to Forbes magazine in 2019. Do you have an exit strategy to leave domestic violence relationships? As of today's date, we have 2,860 domestic violence shelters in service to 35 million people. If you average that out, that is approximately 60 shelters per state, and Alaska has 32. Each shelter holds approximately 150 people on average. That means only 9,000 people in the entire United States is capacitated to stay at those shelters at any given time during one half of the year. To make matters worse, these shelters are funded through state and government grants, and the state government grants runs out, the shelters close their doors, turning people away who need them during the second half of the year. Many of these domestic violence shelters don't support men. They don't support supportive family members who are in need to help them get back on their feet. They don't support pets who experience domestic violence, and they don't support children of the victim of domestic violence. And I need to ask you if this is fair. An estimated 550,000 people experiencing homelessness throughout the United States, and that represents approximately 17 people per 10,000, according to the January 2017 study. In Alaska, an estimated 2,816 were homeless during any given day of the year, according to Housing and Urban Development. However, HUD and Section 8 housing continues to push residences to be poor because if they had met the next higher earned income bracket, they would lose their homes. There are the bottom of 20%, and approximately 5% of that same 20 have managed to secure a more permanent dwelling. All 20% of the people fall shy of just $20,000 annually per household. Are we truly safe if we cannot afford the $8.6 to $12.8 billion annually on domestic violence? Calling attention to the global initiative to end all corporal punishment of children is vastly important to our local United States because it reaffirms the responsibilities that we have right here in our home setting. If a global community doesn't want to treat its children bad, then what have we been doing right here in our own society? The U.S. Alliance to End All Hitting of Children was formed in 2011 to bring together individuals and organizations who want to end this dangerous form of discipline, as they joined forces with Vincent J. Fontana Center for Child Protection of the New York Foundling and the American Professional Society on the Abuse of Children in 2018. Collectively, they are working toward the goal of ending all hitting of children. On their website, they claim the single greatest cause of child abuse is parental use of physical punishment, and they continue to reaffirm that child abuse is linked to child misbehavior, child mental problems, relationship difficulties with parents, and also agree that children who are raised in abusive homes are more likely to perpetuate abuse as an adult. According to the American Psychological Association, the Council of Representatives finds and declares that the development of the national strategy to prevent and treat child abuse and neglect is a matter of highest urgency, and that psychologists can and should contribute substantially to such a national effort. Twenty to 60% of the population experience job loss because of domestic violence abuse. When we discussed domestic violence against men, 97% of men had experienced rape, physical violence, or stalking by a female perpetrator. 87% of men reported other male violence. 82% of men reported female coercion. 46% of men reported being stalked by females. 43% reported being stalked by other males. And nearly 41% of men reported stalking of some kind before the age of 25 years old. I came here today because I believe in fighting back for my Alaska, and this is my home, born and raised in Nome, Alaska, and I'm not only fighting solely for myself, but for my three daughters' futures also. And I want to thank that Alaska Native and American Indian women will be okay in the future, but we make up 5 out of the 6 missing and murdered going on today, and I need to ask you, while Alaska Native and American Indian only make up 2.6 of the United States population, what are you doing right now to secure our future?
Thank you. I don't see any questions. Thank you very much. Now we will move on to the Wrangell LIO, where Leslie Rice, could you please come up and introduce yourself and your affiliation, and after that would be Winston Davies.
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Leslie Rice, and I'm representing myself. I've lived in Wrangell for 24 years, and 15 of those years to work for the Department of Fish and Game Commercial Fish Department as a dock port sampler, counting the sampling and sampling the catches of the fishermen's fishes in Wrangell. And I also worked in the Wrangell office as a fill-in when needed there. So I know firsthand how busy the Wrangell office is, and I believe it would be a hardship for the fishermen and the general population here to lose this office. There are so many services offered here that would be hard to reach via the Internet because of our location. For example, when the fishermen come to register for their fishing year and or to purchase their ADF&G required Dungeness tags or to replace those lost tags, not everyone has computers to use. So not everybody can go online to get this business done. Many fishermen come to the office also for the weekly newsletter that give the dates and the weekly fishing areas, maps, and tallies. Sometimes the fishermen need to check out our wall charts and must actually be explained, too, about the allowed fishing areas. As an employee of the Department of Fish and Game as a commercial port sampler, sampling on the dock all day with our electronic handhelds, our units have to go back to the office and connect to the Internet to send out our sampling information to our bosses, which are in Juneau, Petersburg, and Sitka. Our sampling helps determine the next week's openings for the fisheries. The Wrangell office is shared with Sportfish and the Wildlife Division. The charter operators would have to find another way to pick up their annual required saltwater logbooks. Out-of-state sport fishermen come in all the time to ask all sorts of questions about the fishing in Wrangell and what's legal in the areas. The hunters would have to find another way to turn in their required moose jawbone and to get the education to find out what actually a legal moose is in this area. There's a lot of trappers here, so there's quite a bit of fur sealing that's also done here in this office. This office is a multi-dimensional workstation, busy and well-used by the public, and is truly needed by our town. I believe it would be a great hardship to lose it. Again, after living in this town for 24 years, married and raising our three children, I'd like to address the lack of ferry service. Our three girls were involved in many facets of school. From sports to music, they traveled all over Southeast so they could compete with their schools, since Wrangell has only one junior high and high school. We have been on the ferry so many times for these functions, we wouldn't have been able to afford Alaska Airlines or any other airlines to travel to these functions. My husband and I are now retired, and we'd like to go visit our kids down south with our car. But since Prince Rupert Sailing is almost obsolete, we are finding we can't afford to go see them because of the lack of ferries and the extreme cost to travel to Bellingham on the ferries. We so need our ferries back. I especially feel bad for the communities that are not getting the food they need and also the families trying to give their kids the opportunity to have a well-rounded school experience. And one more important thing that I feel is so vital to the community is our radio station. I live 12 miles out the road and only come to town 3 days a week. The radio station keeps me informed of the daily news, town activities, and entertainment, too. It is a very important feature for our town and one that I use every single day of the week. Well, I thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. I don't see any questions. Next, Winston Davies.
Hi, my name is Winston Davies. I was born and raised here in Wrangell. Lived here for 42 years now. I'm a teacher and a commercial fisherman. I just want to state that, I'm testifying on behalf of the Wrangell Fish and Game Office here. Wrangell's not a village. I know a lot of people up north don't realize that, but there's a lot of business that runs through this office. Not just commercial fishing, but sport fishing, subsistence fishing, trapping as well. There are, I don't know how many Dungeness crab permit holders there are in this town, but Wrangell's kind of the mecca, one of the meccas in Southeast for the Dungeness fishery. So crab tags are, it takes Kim a lot of time to get those out to all the fishermen. Supplying the fishermen with tags for their lost pots. Also, one of the things is registering crab vessels as a tender. A lot of guys play a game where you got to go register and deregister the vessel, and you know, you need somebody to be there to do that on that day. So anyhow, very important commercial fishing wise. Transboundary river. There's a lot of stuff going on up the river with fish and game. You know, it's just bustling here in the summertime. The moose check-in, you know, Wrangell's got a really weird deal as far as the moose hunt goes. We've got a lot of weird antler configurations, and it takes somebody to interpret those antlers. And through the month of September, October, that keeps Kim real busy. Also, she's busy checking in hides, wolf hides, marten hides, otter hides. They all need tags, and there's a lot of guys out there doing that. It's a very, very important spot here, and there's a lot of traffic in and out of this office here. So, and I'd also, while I'm on here, I'd also like to say that I support the ferry. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any questions. Next, we'll go to the off-net, where Julie Decker. Could you please introduce yourself and your affiliation?
Yes, this is Julie Decker. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
My name is Julie Decker, and I am testifying today on behalf of the Alaska Mariculture Task Force. I also submitted written comments earlier today. The Alaska Mariculture Task Force supports the actions of the Department of Natural Resources, Department of Fish and Game, and DEC subcommittees. A finance subcommittee, specifically three items. First, accepting the increment of $187,300 and two positions to the Department of Natural Resources for aquatic farm application processing. Second, rejecting the decrement of one position from the aquaculture planning and permitting section of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And third, rejecting new PSP testing fees for the industry in the Department of Environmental Conservation budget. In 2016, the Mariculture Task Force was established by Administrative Order 280 with the directive to provide recommendations to develop a viable and sustainable mariculture industry. In 2018, the task force completed a statewide comprehensive plan, and I have a link in my written testimony to the plan. It's online. The task force was reauthorized in 2018 by an additional administrative order to continue with implementation of the plan. And upon his election, Governor Dunleavy also kept the task force in place because he shares the vision of what mariculture could mean to the state, which is jobs and opportunities. In our plan, the Mariculture Task Force has items, recommended items and action items related to these three budget items. All three actions that I outlined above by the House Finance Subcommittees will support continued and further development of the mariculture industry towards our goal to grow a $100 million per year industry in 20 years. And I'd like to note that the agency representatives on the task force recuse themselves from any budget actions. So thank you for your time and consideration. If you have any questions, I'm standing by.
Thank you. Representative Carpenter.
Just curious what part of the state she was calling from.
Oh, she's from Wrangell.
Wrangell.
Yes. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Next, we'll go to Sitka LIO for Jerry Hope.
Good afternoon. My name is Jerry Hope. I'm speaking for myself. I am thank you for allowing an opportunity for people to speak and give input about the operating budget. My concern has to do with the Alaska Marine Highway System and support a full operating budget that matches the need necessary to meet the need for all vessels to operate. All coastal communities who are served by the ferries are hurting now based on the current budget and should never have gotten to this point. Simply looking at how serious the situation is in communities served by the ferries, now cut off from service, has come to a critical moment. things taken for granted by those who have a road system and or air service likely don't know, some communities are struggling to get food and access to needed health care, not to mention quite a variety of other things, such as in me being Tlingit, recognize and appreciate our cultural connectivity throughout the year. And we don't have that right now. Also affected are the education activities, whether it be sports or other kinds of activities, music, arts, and other dialogues that are necessary for education. That said, I really do appreciate the time and advocate strongly for a full funding operating budget for the Alaska Main Highway System. Thank you.
Thank you. I do not see any questions. Currently, in all of our LIOs and OffNet, I do not see anybody else signed up. So we will again take a 30-minute at ease. Call this meeting back to order, and we will go to the Petersburg LIO with Stan Yort. Could you come up and introduce yourself and your affiliation?
Okay. I'm Stan Yort. I live in Petersburg. I've been here over 50 years, and I'll make it pretty short. This is not only to the House Finance Committee, but to everybody involved. And I'm going to read this because I did it on pretty short notice. This is where we are. People of Southeast already are being driven back to pre-ferry conditions. In essence, travel for schools, medical, which I myself have to do now. I'm going to have to fly back and forth to Seattle to see my cardiologist. And for business, and for shopping, and for food. When you've got kids in Sitka that are putting a GoFundMe outfit together so they can get food shipped into Huna, for goodness sakes. The problem with ferries lies with the legislature, current and past, all legislatures, for poor or no planning, kicking the can down the road. They knew that they were going to have to replace the ferries, and yet nobody got together and worked on anything, and they haven't worked on, oh my goodness, I'm sorry. When the PFD was started, the citizens of Alaska would have been happy to vote for $1,000 a year flat, no change. We were told the PFD was not to give citizens a fat check every year. And I seen Oral Freeman, who was on television at the time and had been part of the Charter Commission for the state and ran as a Democrat and got more votes than anybody ever did, although he didn't win, as a Democrat from Southeast. And he said it isn't about getting a fat check every year, and we got to save some of that money for future downturns and needs. And now somebody wants to spend it all. So it wasn't about fat checks every year. We have to save for a rainy day. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any questions. Thank you. We will go now to the Rango LIO with David Macri.
Hello, David Macri, resident of Rango. I'd like to talk about two things real quick. A, the necessity to investigate and, if necessary, acquire an OCS representative counselor for the borough of Rango. And B, restore and maintain Alaska Marine Ferry Line System transportation opportunities to all ports utilized last highway peak season, including Port Rupert. No need to increase services, even if we could have services reduced as long as we continue to visit those ports that were in service last peak season. That would be great. Thank you very much for your time. No questions.
Thank you, and I don't see any questions here also. Next, we'll go to OffNet for Catherine Bolak. Could you please introduce yourself and your affiliation?
Hi, my name is Catherine Bolak, and I am representing myself. So I was unable to upload the subcommittee report, so this is just a general comment about continued support, particularly for the Alaska Performance Scholarship, the Alaska Education Grant, continued full funding for Medicaid, including the Medicaid coverage for licensed professional counselors, which I believe is extremely important here in Alaska, as well as the continued funding for senior benefits. Something obviously needs to be done with the Pioneer Homes. It's shameful what has happened. And then, of course, the funding restored for the Alaska Marine Highway System. Extremely important. There's so many issues, and but I just wanted to read this brief summary of comments. So thank you.
Thank you, and I do not see any questions. Thank you very much. Next, we'll go to the Cordova LIO and Joanne Thomas.
Good afternoon. Joanne Thomas, a 45-year resident. We still do commercial fishing, my family. I am a retired postmaster. I have a deep concern about the budget. My first and most prominent recommendation is a state income tax. I believe that people who are invested take a greater interest in the public good because they've supported that good with their money. So again, if I could just make that point, income tax would help many of our budget problems. I would also be in favor of a cap on the permanent fund dividend. I agree that it is necessary for many village residents, but I think a budgetary cap would suffice. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, and I do not see any questions. Thank you. Next, Darla Church.
Yes. Darla Church, I am a retired teacher, have lived in Alaska for 51 years and taught 25 years in the Cordova system. And I have three areas that I have concerns about that I'd like to speak to today. And one is the Marine Highway. I feel like it is a primary to the economy of Alaska in a multitude of ways. Alaska has 6,640 miles of coast, more than all of the other states combined, and includes 33,904 miles of shoreline. How is it that we think we can keep an economy going without an efficient ferry system to keep goods, people, and transportation moving at an economical rate? Our coasts are home to many aspects of our state economy, such as the fisheries in its many forms, fish processing, tourism, state fish and game units, Federal Forest Service, Coast Guard, et cetera, et cetera. Right now, the Ketchikan Boatyard is not equipped to handle all of the repairs of the present ferries. Some of the ferries should be taken to Seattle-Tacoma shipyards to get the ferries back in service ASAP. I am not for a full PFD to the detriment of basic funding for our schools, ferries, and universities. The real future of our state lies in a strong social infrastructure that builds a quality future for ourselves and the generations to come. If we let these basic forms of society collapse, rebuilding them will cost much more. By living and working in Alaska, we have earned a place with a positive opportunity to thrive and not just a cash bonus. The laws governing the PFD should be rewritten so that there is a limited PFD, a limited amount put into public funding, and enough to maintain the principal now accrued with some growth. I also have an opinion about an income tax, because too much of our profits from our natural resources of fisheries and oil go outside. Many fishermen spend the winter in the lower 48, and many oil workers have 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off schedules that they spend on their off schedules in the lower 48. They often pay income tax on the money that they make in Alaska to other states, such as Oregon. I would like to see a reduced level of tax on those who are never out of the state more than 60 days a year. We do that with a PFD. It seems like we could do that with a state income tax. This may affect me in the future. My kids now live outside. When I get too old to live in Alaska by myself, I may have to be there, and I get a retirement from Alaska. I should be paying an Alaska of income tax on that even then. So the lower 48 right now benefits way too much from our natural resources. Thank you.
Thank you. I do not see any questions. Thank you for coming out today. Is there anyone else in the room or online who would still like to testify?
We have two in Sitka. Scott Maxwell, Robert Hattle.
No. seeing none, I also would like to remind Alaskans that written testimony can be submitted to housefinance@akledge.gov. That's housefinance@akledge.gov. And with that, I will close public testimony. Our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, February 24th at 1:30 p.m. At that meeting, we'll take up HB 234, the FY20 supplemental, to adopt a new committee substitute and begin taking up governor's amendments to HB 205, the FY21 operating budget, and HB 206, the FY21 mental health budget. With that, at 2:37 p.m., we are adjourned.